Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
This is a Team Human special report, sliding into your podcast stream with news from the front lines of our intervention in the machine. I'm Douglas Rushkoff, reporting on the exploits of Team Human hero and role model, Andy Biggleboom. I was watching my favorite news channel, Newsmax, the other night, and the aptly named wonderful show, America Right Now, which I like because it sort of says right now and let's get it right. Like, let's move America to the right now before it falls over the left. And I was delighted to see, especially in my new incarnation as a right winger, I was delighted to see they managed to get an interview with my personal favorite former defense secretary, fellow neocon hawk, Paul Wolfowitz. And then, much to my surprise, Wolfowitz was on there basically admitting that the entire Afghan war had been this huge mistake, that we wasted trillions of dollars on a misguided and unwinnable war. So take a listen to Paul Wolfowitz speaking truth like he's on the friggin' Reverend Billy Show.
Welcome back to America Right Now. It has been a week since Afghanistan fell to the Taliban, and still tens of thousands of Americans and Afghanis are still trapped in the country facing an uncertain future. To get his views on how we got here and how we move forward, former Deputy Secretary of Defense under President George W. Bush, someone who is an architect of our national response after 9/11, Paul Wolfowitz. He joins us on the phone. Mr. Secretary, good to have you with us.
Great to have you. Thank you.
So we are nearing the 20th anniversary of 9/11. You were there at the beginning. Did you believe that the mission in some form should have continued?
Oh, absolutely, Tom. That goes without saying. I there's been a lot of talk about how President Biden ended this war in Afghanistan and on what we have to do now. But there's very little about the fact that Biden did end this war. What the piece in the Wall Street Journal is truly about is that a sitting president in the office of president unnecessarily ended a war for no reason at all. Mm-hmm. Because let's be honest, Tom, there just aren't a lot of things that ordinary Americans can be proud of these days. We know that other prosperous countries have it better in healthcare, infrastructure, education, elder care, food options, and income. And if you take away our global dominance, we're left with a whole lot of nothing. But with nothing to show Americans why Americans great dominance in a place like Afghanistan is all we've got to keep us away from that ledge. $2 trillion could have been spent building stuff that people want instead of going to big defense contractors and shareholders, but that's all milk under the table, Tom. And the point is, ending a war with nothing at all to replace it is the pinnacle of irresponsibility when you've got crumbling infrastructure, rising addiction and death rates, poor food options, substandard education, expensive health care, and so on. Americans just can't be proud of that. But they can be proud of a war, even if it's unwinnable, even if it lasts 20 years, even if it's been a failure from day one in my administration. That's what we've lost, and that is truly tragic, Tom.
But no, that was not Paul Wolfowitz flummoxing the Newsmax anchor, but team human friend, mentor, and co-conspirator in constructive mind fuckery, Andy Picklebaum. Hi.
How did that happen?
How did that happen?
Funny you should ask.
I love when I find out that the guy from, well, I actually hate it, but I love it too, that like the guy from DuPont admitting that they're now going to give $1 billion to the people that got exploded in Bhopal turns out to be Andy Picklebaum and the Yes Men bringing down the DuPont stock by like 9.3% in 6 minutes by making DuPont actually look like a non-evil company or a less evil company for a moment. But this was great. This was a great one. So thank you for interrupting my neocon moment and bringing me back to sense. How did this one happen? How did you think to get onto Newsmax as Paul Wolfowitz and use the occasion of our withdrawal from Afghanistan to refocus America on its many other problems?
Well, Doug, we Yes Men have many ways, and you can read all about them on our website. We have a book of tricks that explains how we do these things. This one involved some special magic. There is such a thing as a trade secret, even in our profession, yours and mine.
Right. No. You should use your trade. But I guess what I'm wondering is, if without giving away the trade secret, was this something that you thought we should do this thing, or like so many of the things, was this something that arose through one of the many beautiful nets you have set up, and then you rose to the occasion to figure out how to exploit the event?
Somehow we ended up on the Newsmax list of contacts for the American Enterprise Institute, which Mr. Wolfowitz is a fellow, and they wanted to book him for, you know, this America Now Today. What is it called?
America Right Now.
America Right Now.
ARN, as we call it in the industry.
With Tom Basile, who is this super right-wing asshole Cretan presenter. And he wanted Wolfowitz to discuss Biden's catastrophic withdrawal from Afghanistan and how bad it was. I guess he wanted to talk to Wolfowitz because Wolfowitz was actually one of the main architects of the invasion. Or of the framework for the invasion way back when, the project for New American Century, which barely remember, but we can Google it.
This was all a 9/11 response, I guess, under George W.
Yeah, the invasion, I think, began in early October of 2011. In other words, like less than a month after September 11th.
Or 2001.
Yeah, sorry, 2001.
I know. It was 20 years ago, not 10, believe it or not. Yeah.
I know. We were children. And it was 2001. And even though none of the hijackers were, of course, from Afghanistan or Iraq, invasion happened of Afghanistan and Iraq. So they wrote... Basile's producers wrote to the American Enterprise Institute looking for Paul Wolfowitz, and I promised them a Zoom interview with Mr. Wolfowitz, and I had this plan. When the time approached, I would log on, me, wearing these glasses, because everybody on that show has insane glasses. So I would look like this, and they also have lots of teeth. So I can send you a picture. It's quite beautiful. I had a plant behind me rather than a kitchen. And I would log on and say, sorry, Ambassador Wolfowitz is stuck in a hotel in Tahiti. His Wi-Fi isn't very good. Oops.
Right. You're Kurt Schlimmelfoffer from...
Exactly. Kurt Schlimmelfoffer is going to talk to you. And so here I am. And they said, no. They said, no, we really want Paul Wolfowitz, and we're going to wait. So just tell him to get his Wi-Fi together. I said I was on the line with him. They waited. It was like, 15 minutes. They put a congressman of some sort before. And finally, they said, since you're on the phone with him, can we just patch him through? And I said, right. And I did. I said, yeah, sure. And that became thus the first time that the Yes Men have ever impersonated a real person. Like, we've always impersonated fake people. We've always created fake people, to impersonate a company or a government agency, but we've never before impersonated an actual living human being. And he is living. So
That makes sense. Right. Your DuPont person was a manufactured dude with a title that maybe some person had at DuPont, but maybe not. You make up the titles too.
Yeah. It was Jude Finisterre, which meant patron saint of the impossible and end of the world. Never going to happen.
And the person with the candles, again, was a fake with the Reggie Watts human remains candles.
That's right. Reggie Watts was a real person, but not the person, passing out the candles. Right. So anyways, there I am as Wolfowitz, accidentally. I have no idea what he sounds like. And, because I haven't expected to have to impersonate him. And anyways, I wouldn't even be able to do it because I'm actually a terrible actor. I can do this when, my interlocutor believes I am a certain thing, but I can't just put on an accent or anything.
You seem to do your very best acting when the person you're talking to is beginning to suspect that you're not who you say you are. Then it's sort of like the acting like you do for a cop of like, there's no pot in the back of the car. It kicks in. This other self-defense mechanism seems to kick in with you.
You might... I'll have to think about that. That might be right. I do feel this like, ooh, I better get extra conservative or something.
Right. There's no Jews in the attic. There's no Jews in the attic.
There's none. Oh my God. Dark.
So the beauty of this, so it seems like, so you had a strategy.
The strategy was to get into it by offering a new conservative talking point about Biden's ending the war. There's all this talk about how abruptly it was, how unprepared, how catastrophic it's been, how sudden, how blah, 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 blah. And what I said was, well, all that's well and good, and yeah, it's terrible, but the real problem here is that he ended a war. And the fact that there is now no war, and that a sitting president in the office of president ended an actual war that was going on means that Americans have nothing else to be proud of. Because we have crumbling infrastructure, terrible healthcare, expensive and substandard if you can't afford it education. We have terrible elder care. We have poor food options in any other than rich neighborhoods, and they're expensive. We have lower income, lower social mobility than anywhere else in the developed world. And so on and so forth.
Right. So the beauty of it was that rather than doing the sort of the leftist argument, which would have been, we could have spent this money on something else and done good. Instead, you're thinking, well, if we're going to spend $2 trillion to make us feel like the greatest country in the world, then we can either spend it on a war that we failed. But if we're going to leave the war, we can't leave that war until we have something else to feel really superior about.
Right. And that would be social mobility, elder care, education, healthcare, infrastructure, all that.
As a last resort, what if we actually help people in America?
Exactly. So the problem with the withdrawal was that Biden didn't wait until he had built some infrastructure or whatever so that people could be proud of being American. Instead, we just have nothing now.
Right. But then the beauty is when this thing turned. There was a moment when you pivoted, and it felt almost accidental but genius. And that's what you're talking about, the people who are stranded in there. So we'll play the clip here.
You're on the board of an organization called No One Left Behind. So talk to us about that organization and what they are doing in the here and now to help those who are stranded under Taliban rule.
Oh, of course. Well, we are doing everything in our logistical capacity, which is, frankly, Tom, not that much. I mean, we're talking about a large country with millions of people. If every single Afghan man, woman, and child who deserves to get out of there, which is every single Afghan man, woman, and child, let's be frank, every single one of them deserves to get out of there, then there is no way that an organization, which is, at the end of the day, a small organization, can possibly help with that. The entire U.S. military could not possibly help with that either. The fact is that there are a lot of people who will remain, and it's not going to be a pleasant situation. It could have been a better situation, certainly, for people in Afghanistan. For Americans, though, 300 million Americans, what this means is that there is one major thing less to be proud of. And without the sorts of things that we should have here at home, that leaves pretty much nothing at all to keep us away from that cultural ledge, let's call it.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Tom, there have been a lot of mistakes here. There have been a lot of mistakes from day one, talking about the Taliban as being the same as Al-Qaeda or what have you. I haven't heard that clip, but I'll take your word for it, is a mistake. And pulling out of Afghanistan without anything to show for it, without anything to show here or there, is a mistake. But there have been mistakes made from the get-go, from the administration that I was a part of, enormous mistakes. The last administration, also, when President Trump met with the Taliban and conceded an enormous amount of things to them in advance, that was a mistake. There have been mistakes. Certainly Obama. President Obama is, whitewashing or whatever you want to call it of the record was a mistake. The whole 20-year war has been one colossal mistake that was fairly easy to predict. I think what we can do today is simply learn from our mistakes, and the next time we have $2 trillion lying around, we do something useful with it instead.
Yeah, and again, Mr. Secretary, I'm not entirely sure how spending trillions on roads, which may be necessary here from a domestic policy standpoint, actually improves or protects this country from a national security standpoint. But we do appreciate you spending some time with us and appreciate your service to the country. Former Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Okay, so the logic in the clip is that we should evacuate the whole country, right?
And right.
We can't stop until everyone is just empty of people.
Yeah, yeah. And I tell them that's obviously what we should do. That's the only moral thing to do. We should just evacuate every single man, woman, and child. But of course, our organization can't do that. The entire U.S. military cannot do that. So we're stuck with both a disastrous Afghanistan, and that's thanks to, 20 years of failed policy going back through every single president, and we're left not only with a disastrous Afghanistan, we're left with a disastrous America that nobody can be proud of, because we don't have that disastrous war going on anymore, and we have nothing else to be proud of.
And then it starts to sound like you're almost surprised. It's like 11 minutes into this thing. It's like you're expecting like a 4-minute hit to drop in all your points. And the guy's keeping you going. It's like 11 minutes. It's going to go to like 15 or 17 minutes.
I know.
And you do the classic yes men turn at that point, which was the total mea culpa. So we basically get at that point, we get Paul Wolfowitz saying at the whole war was a mistake. I was wrong. We shouldn't have done it to begin with.
Well, he actually avoids saying that he himself is at fault, or that his his administration is at fault. And, you know, I think that's kind of accurate. I have no idea what his role really was in that.
Right.
But the whole administration was, of course, messed up to have launched that war. And the following administrations, like Obama's, for example, was, you know, a great fault for just keeping it going and deflecting any criticism. And then Trump, with his complete capitulation to the Taliban in that news conference, that certainly didn't make it easier. So laying the blame at Biden is, of course, what they wanted to do. But what I tried to do is get in there that this is actually a very long mistake. And, you know, I did do a kind of mea culpa. And, you know, what I really did was just kept repeating, like, the $2 trillion number, $2.4 trillion. And, you know, I think at one point I said, the next time we have a couple trillion dollars lying around, let's use it for something we can be proud of. And
right.
That's all I could say, because, yeah, you're right. I did expect a 4-minute hit, and I wrote 4 minutes worth of stuff, but then I did the classic PR move, you know, bridging. Like, anything he said, I just brought back to my one talking point.
Right.
Because I hadn't bothered to make more.
And he was so upset with that talking point, too, because it's like, wait a minute, all of a sudden you're like this pro-infrastructure bill liberal. And he's like, well, as an aside, I could really pick on that bill. There's a lot of problems with Biden in that bill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so he's like, you're here for the war stuff, mister. Don't.
Of course. And I'm very conciliatory. Of course I am. I understand. One weird thing about this, I don't know if you noticed, is that he knows Wolfowitz. And he worked.
He
says that in the clip. And apparently they even worked in government together at some point in the Bush administration. But he says, like, we were on the front, you know, we were standing on the lines looking at the bombing of Baghdad, whatever it was that he says. So he knew me and didn't notice that I wasn't me. My voice was apparently not a giveaway. I don't know.
Right. And you didn't even change your voice between the person who was, you know, Wolfowitz's handler and Wolfowitz himself.
No, obviously. Yeah, I couldn't. I mean, these people are just not very observant, which may be a key to their politics. They may just simply be a little, like, uninterested in the world to such a degree that they don't even notice when their friend doesn't sound anything right. Like their friend.
Do you ever accidentally ensnare leftist media? I mean, does, like, MSNBC or NPR ever call one of your things?
No, they never have.
They don't? Isn't that odd?
Yeah.
Isn't that odd? It's as if, and I know the left has its problems, but it's as if regular journalists actually, like, went to journalism school and learned the basics of how do you vet a source. And
yeah, to some degree. Yes, yeah. Yes. I mean, there's times when, you know, well, like leftish reporters have fallen for things and they've published it, but they not to the degree where they completely misrepresent everything. It's a different kind of degree.
So this is a beautiful one. I mean, it is funny. It is just like the movie where you guys are sitting in your bat cave waiting, and then one of your traps goes off. And ding, 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 ding.
And then suddenly the 2 days are hijacked, and then it's all over. Yeah, it's a really interesting process. There's so much work to do that, you know, it looks like just me on television ranting. But coming up with the rant, preparing for it, calming the nerves, and then afterwards processing it and trying to make it into something more than a little tiny blip that nobody notices. It's a lot of work. It's like hours and hours of work. I mean, you know, first world problems. I'm glad to be able to do it, but it isn't quite as easy as it looks, maybe.
And did Newsmax find out eventually? Do they know yet?
They certainly didn't in the aftermath. I got notes from the producer saying, he was great. Thank you so much. And I, you know, oh, I'm so sorry for the Wi-Fi problems with Mr. Wolfowitz, but, you know, next time we'll do better. And he said, oh, no worries. And
because I wonder if I shouldn't broadcast this because it'll expose to Newsmax. Maybe they still don't know and they'll call you back.
No, they might not know. I mean, yesterday, well, I did like tweet it and Facebook it and blast out a little announcement to a bunch of people, put up a Substack.
That's how I found out.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It was our Substack, I think, that you saw probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think Newsmax is on our list, so they may still not know.
Because it would be great. We could create a movement of thousands of people tweaking Newsmax and networking right out in the open, saying, okay, you guys handle this, you be George Bush, you do that.
Yeah, it wouldn't be too hard. You know, there's some magic, but it's not very complicated magic compared to, like, real magic. I've seen some real magic, and those people know what they're doing, you know.
Well, yeah, but you can learn this magic. You can learn this magic for a very, very low fee by going to the Yes Men. You go to the yesmen.org and sign up for, what's it called, the Yes Men?
The yesmen.org/learn. If you go to that, you'll see all of our tricks laid bare. There's a zillion of them, all, like how to infiltrate conferences, how to get on TV, all these things. You can also read our lessons, the kinds of things that we learn. Like in this case, one of the things I was reminded of is how you have to just roll with it. Like I had not thought of patching Wolfowitz through on the phone. Like that was a brand new thing, not in the repertoire. And so when the guy suggested it, I was like, that's a great idea. You have to just be ready to improve your techniques, develop new ones, and so on. So that's a lesson that, you know, we post that type of thing on the website. We try to help other people learn from our mistakes. There's a couple of different ways that you can work with us. Like, or if you're an NGO, you can go to theyesmen.org/work and find out ways to work with us. If you want to support us, we have a donation page, theyesmen.org/donate, as it happens. But yeah, no, read our tricks. That's the main thing. Read our techniques and tricks and use them. That's the biggest gift you can give us.
Oh, no, thank you. And thank you for all the gifts that you give us. You know, and I don't know, and I'll never know how much progress we make in this, you know, actually politically and in terms of cultural social change, but spiritually, in terms of giving people like me hope that we can break through, you know, just to see it on there. It's that moment. It's that rallying cry. It's when the person manages to put a, you know, whatever on the Hitler or Hussein, you know, billboard up in your town, that someone had the guts to go asshole with spray paint across it. This is that, except so articulate. Just the moment to think of what could be the alternate reality and to imagine I'm living in a world where Paul Wolfowitz is saying that.
Right. Well, you know, Doug, one of the lessons that I really take to heart and that speaks to what you just said is that actions always fail. Like the sort of thing that we just did, you know, with Paul Wolfowitz, whoops, it's not going to have any effect. But if there's a movement that it's a part of, it'll succeed. Movements almost always do succeed. And you don't really see it in the moment, but eventually they do. I thought a lot about this, but because I'm coming up with a timeline right now. We're having a little art show, and we're going to put a timeline of the Yes Men on the wall. The curator asked for that. And so I've been thinking a lot about this. The timeline begins not just for the Yes Men, but for the entire movement in 1994 with the Zapatistas declaring war on the Mexican state. And then their subsequent incredibly clever activism brings the whole idea of anti-globalization or alter-globalization and the problems with financial globalization to the West, to the developed world, to the global North. And then you have the Battle of Seattle, which comes directly out of the Zapatista struggle and the global South struggle. And then out of that, eventually, comes Occupy Wall Street. They're directly linked. Same people, same ideas, different approach, very different context, but same exact ideas. And guess what? Out of Occupy Wall Street comes Bernie Sanders' campaign. You know, without Occupy, there would have been no Bernie Sanders campaign. And because of the Bernie Sanders campaign, we have a Biden that feels obligated to deliver some progressive things. Right. So, you know, the Zapatistas, thank you for Biden. And that's the sort of movement picture that you have to feel like it's not all absurd and all hopeless. Because every single action is a failure within that. But together,
together, from Hungry Marching Band to Reverend Billy to you to ThingNet. And I mean, my God, I mean, he's the one who taught me, Ricardo Dominguez, he's the one who taught me about the Zapatistas and that whole thing. I mean,
yeah, I mean, right.
Remember, yes. We've been at this for a while,
and that's where, and we were very aware of the Zapatistas when we got started in all this. Now it's a distant memory, but it's still real. It's still how it happened, and it still is how it continues.
And to this very day, which is why, gosh, in the hopefully tail end of pandemic and the end of this crazy war, and watching people hanging on the landing gear of airplanes in a, you know, unnecessary, well-intentioned war? I don't even think so. Not even a well-intentioned war, just an unnecessary, horrific thing. To see you there, just as you're there after Katrina in New Orleans, just as you're there after Rayovac and Bhopal, you know, to see you there is like seeing your favorite war journalist in the war zone, you know, to see your favorite brother activist, you know, finding your way through the cracks. Boy, it warms my heart, makes me feel alive and like this is worth something. And baby, in solidarity.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you, baby.
All right. I love you. We all love you. And thank you for being such a standard bearer for our little team.
It's mutual. You as well, and everything you've done and do.
This was a Team Human special report. I'm Douglas Rushkoff, and I'll see you later on the next episode of Team Human. You may now return to your regularly scheduled programming.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.